Ron Van Dam hopes that his show will tickle your fancy. We suggest covering your fancy with both hands. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Okay, sure.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. Yes, it is. Don't argue with me. I'll be with you for the next half hour, should you be so gracious and allow me into your whatever car, living room, bedroom. Ooh. All right, here we go. This is the Friday weekend edition of the program. This should last you through the entire weekend. Thanks for being here. As a host, and I am the host of a program, I should be offering you finger sandwiches or maybe a dessert tray or a glass of wine. I would do all those things, only this is a radio program and I can't physically do that. But as they say around Christmas time, when you get a lousy gift, it's the thought that counts. All right. I have an interesting guest coming up a little bit later in the program, but for now, you're stuck with me. But that's not such a bad thing necessarily. Let's see what happens, shall we? I want to hear your radio show like you have one. Oh, you don't? Oh, then be quiet, okay? Stop criticizing me. That's called self-deprecating humor. I do it every once in a while just to mess things up a little bit. I wanted to talk about something fairly serious today. I'm not going to tell you how to raise your children, but I am going to make some suggestions. I'm going to compare childhood today to childhood when I was a child back in 1492. It wasn't that long ago, okay? When I was growing up as a youngster, we didn't have certain things that are available to children now that can screw them up for the rest of their lives. Now, I'm serious about this. Just hear me out, if you would, please. When I was a child, we had no internet. Ron, how did you live? Very well, thank you. We had no internet. That means that as a child, we had a couple of news sources. If we looked at TV around 6 o'clock, we could watch the local news and then the national news. There were newspapers, etc., and there were people who talked to each other, and that was it. Now we have 24-hour cable news stations. Children of the corn, I call them, have cell phones, and the cell phones tell them exactly what they want to hear, and when they don't want to hear it, it's still there for their edification. They also have very seriously violent video games. When I was a child, not only did we not have... The most violent video game was the Atari ping pong game. And then there was the Super Mario Brothers. Oh my God, death and destruction all around. We didn't have those temptations. We could be a child. We could grow up within the dome of safety of our parents and the community and the government and the nation. Was it a facade? Perhaps. But what's so wrong with the facade here and there? It's okay. We deal with facades all day on this particular planet. The facade is okay. So what's the difference between my childhood and your childhood and your child's childhood and your child's 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 childhood? It's realism. And it's all these crazy theories going around all the time. And kids only hearing from other kids. It's like adults. I mean, it's similar to that. As adults, we also live a more tenuous, anxious-ridden life, don't we? Because we're constantly aware of everything. I can sit down at the computer and that computer thing, that international highway of phony information, I can sit there and I can read about somebody in Paris, France, whose mother was attacked by a knife by a criminal and stabbed 50 times and put in a freezer. Okay, that happened, but I don't necessarily have to know that. That's the problem. We are bombarded on a daily basis with negative, horrible things. Here's why I bring this up. Ron, why are you bringing this up? I'll tell you if you just let me. What happened in Israel, the massacre, as we call it, the death and destruction, as we say it, those images are horrific for an adult and doubly, triply, quadruply for a child. A child right now can get on that international highway of computerism, sit in front of a computer screen, and within a split second, call up one of the grossest, most disgusting acts of all time. There are videos now online available of watching the beheading of children by Hamas. And these are things you cannot unsee. You can hear things, you can tell people things, you can hear stories, and then you can hear that story isn't what you thought it was or whatever the case may be, and that can, you know, you can temper that. But once you see someone being beheaded or some type of incredible act of violence, that stays in that brain. And you can be traumatized by that forever, for the rest of your life. So, what is a parent to do? Well, it's a difficult situation. It's a difficult thing to answer. Are you upfront with your children? Or do you somewhat protect them within the dome of protection? I go for the dome. Because watching those disgustingly gruesome videos and hearing these disgustingly gruesome stories, yeah, it's real. But to actually see it is something that does not get erased from the child's mind or from the adult's mind. You see, let me explain something to you. You can know that something horrific is going on, but you can say to yourself, I don't have to see that. I don't have to have that imprinted within my brain for the rest of my life. I don't need that. Because we all have lives to lead. We're on the planet here, you know. We should be having a good time and joking around and all that despite everything that goes on. Now, this isn't the first time in history that we've had horrific things going on. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Let's talk about world wars and the Vietnam War, and let's talk about 9/11, and let's talk about massacres and all. There's goes on all the time, every day. You don't even hear about it. It's normal in many countries. But we have a responsibility to raise our children and to lead our own lives and to somehow navigate through all the crap. It's like going into a sewer system. Make sure you wear the proper gear and make sure that you don't get too much muck on your clothes because it's hard to get out. Or don't go into the sewer system at all. How about that idea? Raising children's a difficult thing these days, and I'm not just talking about 2-year-olds or 3-year-olds or 5-year-olds or 10-year-olds or 15-year-olds or even 20-year-olds. Raising them is difficult because we constantly have to fight the social world to keep our children in line, mentally healthy and physically healthy. But it's that mentally healthy that this is new. This is new. Children knew that there was a Holocaust, gruesome, horrible. There was even newsreel footage of it. It was damaging. People never forgot that. But now we see it in living color in our living rooms, on a computer screen, or on our phones. Children have the ability to see anything they want on their cell phones anytime they want. You can't block this shit out. So what do you do? What do you do when your children come to you and say, "What's going on here?" Well, you have to be honest, but they don't have to immerse themselves in those situations. And don't immerse yourself into those situations either. Don't nosedive into crap. Be sensible, and be sensible to your children and with your children on this subject matter. Don't shield them, don't hide them the truth, but don't immerse them with their heads into the muck either. Which means you have to be a little bit more vigilant about what your kids are seeing and what they're going through. I did a show earlier this week, if I recall anything earlier this week, and it was about the new Saw movie. And I made it, you know, made it humorous, like an Abbott and Costello routine. Did you see Saw? Yeah, I saw Saw. That kind of thing, you know. But I was serious that is one of the most disgusting films ever created, and people are flocking to sit in a movie theater and watch decapitation and people's eyes being put out with sticks and, I mean, and having taking their limbs off. I mean, amputations. It's sadistically horrible, and yet we sit in a movie theater and we watch that. But we know in the back of our minds when I don't, by the way, when I say we, I'm using the royal we. But when we watch that stuff on a movie screen, these fictional, horrific, gory things, especially around Halloween, we know we're watching a movie. These are actors and all that kind of stuff somewhere in the back of our heads. Although when we're watching it, we scream and we go crazy. But if it was real life and you saw that, you will never unsee that again. And it could destroy you for the rest of your life. People coming back from war, soldiers, I greatly understand. I greatly understand what they mentally go through, having seen and experienced and been involved in that type of gory situation. Shield your children, ladies and gentlemen. Shield them, not from the truth, but from what they could be seeing that could never be unseen. Wow, when did I turn into the Pope, huh? The Pope. God. They choose the Pope rather easily. Choosing a Speaker of the House, Republicans can't do that. Maybe they should learn from the choosing of the Pope. Put out a smoke signal on top of the Capitol coming out of the dome. Hey, we need a new speaker. Assign somebody and let's get on with it. Yeah. What is it? What do they call that? The perfect storm? Remember that phrase, a perfect storm? It was a storm in New England or something. It was horrific, and because these two air masses and all these things it all lined up, and it was a horrifically horrible thing. We call it the perfect storm. Well, we're in a perfect storm right now. You've got this conflict going on all over the world, practically. And then hanging over all of that is the planet getting warmer every year and decaying and all that kind of crap, and which is true. So, I mean, there's a lot to be done, and yet you got the Republicans in the House of Representatives pretty much like acting like school children. No, Ron, no. The direction of our country is hanging in the balance. You know what? No, it's not. It's not hanging in the balance. Stop that. Just stop that. We need some grown-ups. Where can we find some grown-ups? Where can we find some sensible grown-ups who've been there, done that? Look, I'm into having younger people get into a government and such. But when it comes to somebody running the country or, like, you know, ruling the world, so to speak, let's have a grown-up involved who knows what the hell they're doing. Shall we do that? Uh-huh. Let's not elect people that are just out for power and for notoriety. Let's stop doing that crap. Let's start choosing people that know what the hell they're doing and have a little bit of compassion for humanity. How about that one? How about a little bit of an idea of what morality is? How about that idea? Can you find somebody like that walking the planet or walking this country? Can you find those people and put a suit on them and let them do some stuff here? Huh? Can you? How about a president who says, you know, the young people are the people of tomorrow. There's no way around that. Let's start a group of young people a branch of government for young people who have a say in what their future is going to be like. How about that idea? How about doing something like that? Anybody come up with that idea? I did. If I can do it, you can come up with ideas like that. Start a branch of government for young people. They don't rule or anything, but they give their input on everything because this is going to be their planet eventually. How about giving them a branch of government that participates in these decisions and these directions? Ron, that's a great idea. Why don't you run for president? I can't. I have too much to do. I have to get up and shower, and then I gotta, you know, eat breakfast. I can't do that. All right, my guest is going to join us momentarily. Thanks for listening there. Hopefully I've, you know, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you what possibly might work here and there. I don't know. All right, we're going to take a short commercial break. Someone has to pay for this. Obviously, you're not. When we come back, more of the program with our guest. But for now, there's this.
Everyone's doing a chicken sandwich these days, but nobody does it quite like Burger Guy. Introducing Burger Guy's new all-beef chicken sandwich. It starts with three of our signature paper-thin patties and a hearty helping of our something-like-cheese sauce on a delicious day-old bun. So what makes it a chicken sandwich? Well, every Burger Guy all-beef chicken sandwich is topped with a crispy Cajun spice free-range chicken beak. It's the tastiest part of the chicken. Science tells us so. The new all-beef chicken sandwich. Available for a limited time, only at Burger Guy.
The Burger Guy all-beef chicken sandwich is available as a meal combo with the Burger Guy metric ton of fries and keg of soda. The Burger Guy all-beef chicken sandwich contains less than 2% chicken by weight and should not be confused with a chicken sandwich containing more than 2% chicken. Consult your physician before eating anything at Burger Guy, ever.
Lorraine Martin joins us now. She's president and CEO of National Safety Council. We're talking about opioid, the problem that we've been living with for years now. And how to save lives from overdose. Is the problem getting worse, Lorraine?
Yeah, Ron, today we're losing 200 people a day in our country to an overdose. Yeah, it's just startling. And You know, the incorporation of fentanyl coming in and lacing some of the drugs that people don't even know that that's there has certainly exacerbated it. But yes, 200 people a day we're losing. And one of the other dynamics that we've seen over the last years is that some of these overdoses, many of them are happening in the workplace itself because they can happen anywhere on and with any walk of life and age group. And many of them are happening in the workplace. And so that's why we really leaned into saying, how can the workplaces be part of getting us out of this incredibly devastating situation we're in?
Lorraine, let me ask you, like, from the beginning here, is this basically due, the overdose, is it basically due to an addiction by choice or recreation, et cetera? Or is it prescribed medications that get into your system? I mean, where does this generate?
It's yes and yes and all of the above. You know, many folks get prescribed an opioid. I know I did when I had some back injuries.
Sure.
They get prescribed an opioid through their employer because they got hurt at work.
Yeah.
And might have the chemistry that says that that's addictive for them and others don't.
Yeah.
In other cases, you know, folks are struggling with drug addiction, as you said, for whatever path got them there.
Uh-huh.
And with fentanyl these days, literally, it can be one pill can kill. It's really important for us to understand that the increase here has been really exacerbated by literally someone just, you know, trusting a colleague at work, perhaps. The story I know firsthand.
Yeah.
Someone hands you a pill and says, oh, this can help your knee since you just hurt yourself and get you to the end of the shift.
Exactly.
And it has fentanyl in it, and the person's dead.
Yeah. Is there something that takes the place of opioids for those that need it medically?
There is, and a lot of that. And we have some materials that we've been sharing literally for the last 10 years on how to use, you know, more regular over-the-counter of Tylenol, Advil-type things and switching off between them. Many medical studies have shown that that's actually as effective, if not more effective, in treating pain and inflammation for many situations where opioids used to be prescribed.
Yeah.
It is telling that now when many opioids are prescribed, and thankfully doctors are and prescribers are understanding this, they're actually prescribing naloxone, which is this opioid overdose reversal medication with the pills themselves, just in case, understanding how addictive and how dangerous some of these drugs can be if they're misused. So a lot of folks I know, they say, well, why did they give me naloxone, you know, with my prescription?
Right.
Well, that's because there are risks.
Yeah. So what is one, I mean, one would one know that they are addicted? Is that something that you're aware of or not? I mean, are you just, does it just become so much part of your
actually,
daily life?
I'm not a doctor.
Yeah,
I'm not a doctor. So that's probably not a place for me to be able to talk firsthand about.
Well, what's your opinion?
you know, I don't, I bet all of the above. Some people cannot realize it, and then it's just like anything that you're struggling with.
Yeah.
And we're much more accustomed to thinking about folks who get a substance use issue with alcohol, and we certainly can understand all the different dynamics of that and understand that it's complicated, and it's not one size fits all for those journeys.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume that relatives and friends would know when somebody is in a situation like that, or would they not know necessarily?
I would say sometimes you don't know, and that's the same thing for your employer and employees and your colleagues. Someone can be struggling right next to you, and you really don't know. And so the one thing that we focus on is helping folks be able to recognize that somebody might be what we call impaired. And For that situation at work, if you want to keep someone safe, you don't really care why they're impaired.
Right.
It could be alcohol or drugs. It could be sleep because they just have a new baby and they're not getting any sleep anymore. And so they're not fit to be driving the forklift today. So we really focus on not the cause, but just to know that you want to keep somebody safe and make sure they're not doing something that could put themselves or others at risk. And then if you do have an emergency and someone's overdosing in front of you, being able to recognize that and being able to respond so that they can get that second chance at getting to the other side of that, whether they're struggling with a substance use issue or whether it really was just a pill someone handed them and now you know, they're struggling with an overdose.
Mm. And the overdose, is it a result of the present dosage not working for you? So more and then more and then more. Is that the bottom line on that?
Yeah, you know, again, I'm not a doctor.
I know that. I know.
So
that.
I don't know. All
I get it. I get it.
But I will say, with fentanyl, the potency of what is being handed to someone or what they're taking, not only is sometimes totally unknown because you don't even know that it's in the you think you're taking, but can be extremely deadly.
And then, like you say, when you can't get it medically, then you start looking for it in other places, and then you really don't know what you're doing. Yeah, I get it. All right.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, and because of all of that uncertainty and complexity, all communities, whether it's wherever you can be around other humans, and we know that this is now a risk for many of the folks in our lives. And right now, about 9% of all the deaths in workplaces are from overdoses. In some states, like California, it's closer to 18%+ of the deaths in workplaces are from overdoses. So workplaces need to be prepared.
Yeah.
And now that this overdose reversal medicine is over-the-counter, approved by the FDA, very easy to administer, can't hurt somebody, it needs to be part of your first aid response. And again, all the questions that you asked are valid, and a lot of folks, you know, wrestle with some of those issues. When someone's dying in front of you, and we know that there's something that very likely will save their life, like an AED or a tourniquet or CPR, you want to have it available to you. And the Respond Ready Workplace Initiative says workplaces can lean into this over the counter. You're covered by Good Samaritan laws. I think you're in Massachusetts. The laws would say do what's right. And we would suggest get people trained. So when this happens, just like any other emergency, you can be ready at work to save a life.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter what state you live in. That still goes. I remember the days when the National Safety Council was most concerned about seatbelts. We've blossomed.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah.
Yeah. But we have blossomed from that, haven't we?
We have. I will tell you, we lose 100 people a day on our roads.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a big focus for the National Safety Council, making sure that we're driving safely, and that when we're on our roads, whether it's in a car or a bike or anything else, that we're taking all the care we can. If we lose 100 people a day on the road, 200 with opioids, it's still the top two places we spend our time.
Really?
And yes, thank you. We were big proponents of seatbelts and car seats for kids and airbags and all of the new technology that's being put in cars too.
Yeah, that was a win-win-win-win-win-win situation. And thank you to the National Safety Council on that and making people aware about that and actually changing the way that we live for the better. So thank you there. Let's hope that this campaign also leads us to a successful location, or at least lessens the dangers of frequency. How can people get more information on all of this?
Yes, on activities having to do with getting your workplace ready for naloxone and addressing an overdose if it occurs, you can go to nsc.org/respond-ready. And anything you'd like regarding safety on our roads and our workplaces, nsc.org. We've got lots of materials and tips for our workplaces and even drivers. So please come join.
Great. She's Lorraine Martin. Thank you so much for what you do, Lorraine. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Well, that'll do it for me today. I'll be back again on Monday with a brand new program. But until that time arrives, take care of yourself. I wish you peace.